10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Live from London, this is the Sunday Lunch with Khalil Rouse on Teachers Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. The time is 1 p.m. on Saturday, the 16th of March, or March of May, and it's my debut Sunday lunch show on Teachers Talk Radio. In today's show, I'll be joined by Sasha White to discuss the trials and tribulations of teaching and parenthood, and later on, we'll be discussing masks, and I'll be asking you how you'd spend that $13.5 billion catch-up fund. And I am live
from London. This is the Sunday Lunch with Khalil Rouse on Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live on the Podbean app or desktop player. Just head over to www.podbean.com/lsw/ttradio or search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio.
Hello, hello, hello. Good afternoon. If you've just tuned in, you've missed me mess up on my intro already, which is good because you missed it, so it's fine. I said it was March. It's definitely not March. It is May. So as I said in the intro, good afternoon. This is strange. There are so many strange things going on right now. Please let me know in the chat if you're here. Show me some love in the chat. Put some emojis. I don't know what you want to put in. Wave, say hello, say good afternoon. Just to check I can be heard to start with. Because I'm in a new location in my kind of house. I'm locked away in the bedroom. It's the daytime, which is strange. I'm used to doing the show in the evening. My son is awake. That's another complication. Who knows how that's going to affect the show? He's in the kind of the living room, two closed doors away. So hopefully you won't have any of those interruptions. I always remember that well-known, what was it, BBC News interview where the kids come, when the kid comes wheeling in while the guy is presenting, or not presenting, while he's being a guest on the news. And I think it's like the au pair or the nanny comes scrambling into the room. That's how I'm envisaging. That's like my kind of nightmare of something happening on this show with my son just running into the room. But at the moment, he's like I said, he's two closed doors away. And I'm going to talk about him because today's show is all about the trials and tribulations of being a teacher and a parent. And so I've got just a kind of a bit of background on me while people are entering the studio. I see a lot of people entering now. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Sasha, I see you there. Nice to see you, Sasha. She's going to be calling in shortly once we get this room popping, as they say. We've also got someone that starts with RMA. No idea who you are, but welcome, thank you. Aaron says happy Sunday to you too, right back at ya. I've got Don in the chat sending in some emojis. As far as I'm aware, I'm also streaming live, not just via the Podbean app, but I think I'm going semi-global, and by global I'm talking YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. Apparently Mr. Tom Rogers let me know that I was streaming live, so if you're listening via Facebook or YouTube or Twitter, welcome. If you want to kind of interact with the show, then you've got to download that Podbean app. The rhyme was not intended there, but it works. You need to download that Podbean app and tune in, and you can kind of get in on the live chat. As always, call in at any time. This is a live talk show, and it works best with callers at any time. I have one scheduled caller coming on shortly, called Sasha White, and we'll be discussing the trials and tribulations of teaching and parenthood. But while Sasha is on the line, that doesn't mean anyone else can't call in. You can call in. It's a talk show. Later on in the show, we'll be talking about these masks on or masks off. It's re-emerged in the news now that we've got the easing of restrictions coming in tomorrow, I believe, which is crazy. And then also in the news recently, they're talking about this $13.5 billion catch-up fund. And I'll be asking you guys how you would spend it if you had the power. I've just seen, oh, I see, the people in the chat. Someone's already shared the live show. Thank you, Mr. Tom Hopkins Burke. Someone doesn't know how to change their name. I can't redirect you. I click on the account, and then I go to settings, I think, account settings, and then it was fairly self-explanatory. I can't remember. Everyone's joining. I might even run the intro one more time because there's a whole bunch of people in here and I want you guys to hear me hopefully nail it better than the first time and actually get the month correct. So let's run it one more time because everyone is joining now.
Live from London, this is the Sunday Lunch with Khalil Rouse on Teachers Talk Radio.
Good afternoon for the second time. It's now 1:05 on Sunday, the 16th of May, and it's my debut Sunday lunch show. In today's show, I'll be joined by Sasha White to discuss the trials and tribulations of teaching and parenthood. Later on, we'll be discussing masks in schools, and I'll be asking you guys how you'd spend that £13.5 billion catch-up fund. As always, tune in and talk it out, and I am
live from London. This is the Sunday Lunch with Khalil Rouse on Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live on the Podbean app or desktop player. Just head over to www.podbean.com/lsw/ttradio or search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio.
Woo, Tom Hopkins Burke, you thought I forgot about my transition music. Never forgot about it. I was just waiting for the right time to drop it for the, there we go, to drop it for the first time. Okay, as I said, last bit of housekeeping before Sasha gets in. So Sasha, just have your finger hovering over that call-in button. As always, please interact in the chat, share the show, call in at any time if you have a point or you want to contribute, or you can just type in the chat if you don't want to come on the live, kind of the live caller. But all people are welcome, whether you're calling from near or far. Someone's actually already calling in. Let's bring them in. Someone's already calling in. Hello, are you there? Oh, no, can't join. May call in later. Okay, let's go. Sasha, can you call in for me, please? And let's get this show on the road. We're just about to talk about, like I said, the trials and tribulations of teaching and parenthood. Sasha, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear, Sasha.
Brilliant.
Loud and excellent. That's, listen, that's all the technical, that's all the technological stuff we need out of the way.
That was the most stressful part for me. I actually figure out how to use the technology.
This it. It's very simple. Listen, I think people before, whenever I invite guests on, I think they feel like it's a quite advanced, and then when you try to explain it to them, they always don't believe you that it's as simple as just download the app, click on the link, click the phone, and that's literally it. They always get the bit of the jitters.
I was hoping for more of like a World War II headphone sort of look, but this will do.
No, just, what have you got, the iPhone headphones?
Yeah, literally just my iPhone headphones.
Standard.
Yeah. To get them out of the original box.
Wow. So, what, the first time using them?
Yep, first time using them.
Fair enough. Well, welcome. Sasha, welcome to my first ever Sunday lunch show. Usually I'm a Saturday late, well, not usually. In the past, I was a Saturday late show kind of guy. Now I'm on in the daytime. Very strange. Sasha, can you do me a favor for myself and the listeners? Mm. Give yourself a quick introduction and explain how you're connected to this topic of teaching and parenthood, please.
So I'm Sasha White. I'm head of history in Lincolnshire, a lovely school. And I'm here because I had a bit of a tweet rant last week, just because I had a really big week with parenting and teaching. And I think it clearly got Khalil's attention. Wasn't intended to, but I have a three-year-old daughter, and sometimes the juggle is quite a bit. So I'm here to discuss that.
Excellent. Thank you, Sasha. And what I'm going to say, anyone in the chat who is also a teacher and a parent at this moment, can you just let us know how old your child is, son, daughter, etc., how old they are, and whether, well, how long you've been teaching whilst being a parent, I guess. I'll be interested. Oh, someone else is trying to call in. 1 second, Sasha. You may have someone joining us. They tried to call in earlier. We'll see if they're going to come in this time. Hello, Sahina. Hello. Sahina, can you hear me? Sahina, unfortunately, I can't hear you at the moment. I don't know if you can hear me, but unfortunately, I can hear some background noise, but I can't hear your voice. Okay, Sahina, unfortunately, I'm going to have to disconnect you, but by all means, try to sort out the technological hitch and call back in if you'd like to contribute to the conversation. Right, I had to disconnect them. Aaron in the chat said Pocket Dial could be.
I think, yeah, Pocket Dial might be right.
It could have been a Pocket Dial. They could have just had Podbean app on the go, put it in, because it seems like it. It seems like a Pocket Dial. Right, as you said, so some people in the chats, we've got Jen says her daughter is 11 months and she got a stepdaughter who's 12. Miss Kato Stem says she's got a son. He's going to be one on Friday. So happy birthday to Miss Kato Stem's son. He's going to be one on Friday. And then Nora said, hey, okay, Sasha, as you said, there was a tweet that you did and it did catch my eye. Whenever I do my shows, I have a look and see what people are talking about and I get influenced by it. And it was, I've got your kind of thread, and you called it Teaching and Parenting in 2021. And it was just, I think it was, was it 10 tweets where you were talking about how your week went. And as I was reading it, I was like, oh my word, I couldn't even, if this is actually how it goes for you, do you, I don't know how you, when you breathe.
I mean, I think probably it's... that was a very busy week. They can be those weeks, but yeah, that was a particularly busy week. And it was just, yeah, I thought the little bit of spare time I have, what I'll do is I will spend it ranting in 10 tweets, apparently.
Did you know it was 10 tweets before you posted the 10
no,
tweets, I'm assuming?
No, I did not. Just kept waffling on. And then...
So I'm actually going to jump. Indeed. I'm actually going to look at them. So you got... Your first one on Monday, you said you're at your desk by 7 a.m. Is that the norm?
Yes. So I am incredibly fortunate in that I have grandparent childcare on a Monday, which means I can get to work really early. It's the only day of the week I can, so I make sure I'm there super early and get as much done as I can to maximise the amount of time. There's a lot of, when you talk about parenting and teaching, there's a lot of maximising the time.
Indeed. Like I said, my son's going to be one very, very soon. And then I think before I had a son, I used to, my timing at work, I used to somehow sometimes get to work a little bit later. But ever since he's got a lot more active, I've been getting into work a lot earlier to try and, again, maximize my time.
To avoid people, the early morning.
Genuinely. Well, that's why you say that. Genuinely. So people, like I said, we've got Mr. Aaron CW said his son is 16 months. He's been teaching for 9 years. So very similar to me, I guess. 7 a.m. starts for me. I keep seeing this thing on Twitter, this teacher 5 o'clock club. What is that, people that are just awake at 5 o'clock?
Oh, it is literally just people who are awake at 5 a.m. and they're
crazy
teachers. Yeah.
I did wonder what it was.
That, but I try to avoid it.
Yeah, I've always wondered what it was. I wonder if anyone else in the room is part of this teacher 5 o'clock club. Are you awake at 5:30 a.m.? I get up these days at 5:30 a.m. That's standard now, and that's crazy to think of it. And to make that happen, I'm going to bed. It's lights out, all out by about 10 p.m. roughly. I'm in bed is what I'm trying to do. So I can actually get some sleep.
I haven't managed that. I am late to bed and early to rise. I'm just having less sleep.
I was going to say, so what time are you roughly getting to bed on average?
Oh, I'm in bed for midnight.
Woo! And you're up at when?
5:30.
My word. So what happens to these kind of 8 hours that we're supposed to get as adults?
I just operate on less now. There's usually a point by about week four of the summer holidays where I can finally start to sleep in more. And then the prospect of going back to 5 hours is less appealing. But I just have less now and, more productive because of it. Probably not great for my health, but there we are.
I was going to say, your body must have, I'm assuming your body's adapted.
Yeah, just has less.
Yeah. People in the chat, let me know what time you wake up. Are you a member of the teacher 5 o'clock club, or do you get a nice little lie until 6? Because me, like I said, I'm a 5:30 guy. I'm on most days a week, I'm getting in about 7, And it's because I've got baby duties in the morning. I've got to be up, I've got to sort his food out. And then he goes to nursery 2 times a week, goes to my parents once a week. And it's all systems go first thing in the morning by the stove, heating up food. Are you doing something similar first thing in the morning?
Breakfast happens at nursery 4 days a week, which is an absolute blessing. When she actually goes to primary school and I have to actually start doing some of the parenting at 7 in the morning, that I think will be more challenging. So, it's all about getting everything lined up by the front door the night before, isn't it?
It is. It's all system. I feel like it's all systems go on the evening beforehand to get
every day is like when you're younger and you used to prepare to go on a holiday and you're like had the early morning run to the airport. That's every day now, isn't it?
It is like that. It is making sure everything is packed so you don't have to worry about it in the morning. And but then there's some evenings when you just can't be bothered, but then you've got to, and you just sat there looking at the unpacked bag, looking at the food that's not in the right containers, looking at everything and just realizing it's just not, just doesn't seem that appealing. And you have to drag yourself off the sofa because it'll be worse if you left it till morning. That's what goes through at the moment. So we had, so desk at 7 a.m. You've got some days you said you get to your desk at 8 a.m.
Most days
8 a.m. then.
Yeah, so when I do the nursery drop off, I then get to work for 5 past 8.
Okay. How did you find that transition? How much time did that give you in order to get your stuff ready for school?
Not a huge amount. I would definitely like to be there earlier, but physically getting from nursery to school, it's the fastest I can get there. So I'm often, and we'll talk, I'm sure we'll talk about the parental guilt, but I'm often the first one waiting there for the doors to open. And that makes it run a bit smoother.
Doors, are you talking about the nursery doors?
Yeah. Like nursery just open up and I'm the first one popping her in, you know.
Yeah, chuck them in and off you go. See ya, I'm off to work now. I think exactly. My partner has to do the same thing. My partner's also a teacher. She does the nursery job
both
in the morning.
Teachers.
We are both teachers.
Gluttons for punishment.
listen, I love the profession. I love the profession. But we are both teachers, so it comes with its challenges. And I think, yeah, like you said, you have just got to drop them and go, because like you mentioned, we will talk about it. There is something about teaching. There's something about guilt. And I found some article that I think kind of expresses it. And I wonder if you guys feel similar. I feel like there's just something about teaching where we feel so much pressure to make, obviously look after our own kids, but then we've got other people's kids we've also got a responsibility for. And it just makes everything a bit more, just feels a bit more weighty, a bit more pressure on us, I guess. And I think that has a knock-on effect that we're going to get into, because I wonder how easy it is. So people that are in, thank you, those of you that are just joining into the studio. As I put in the chat, we're currently starting out this discussion about the trials and tribulations of teaching and parenthood. If you're a teacher and a parent, let us know how you find it. Do you feel like you're able to put your all into your parenting and put your all into the teaching profession, or does something always have to give? Are you capable of being a great teacher and a great parent, or are they mutually exclusive? Is something you're going to have to forego something, I wonder, because both kind of responsibilities could be full-time, well, not even could be, are easily full-time jobs if you let them. And I think they can, obviously, that gets... I've just seen someone in the chat saying they're trying to get their head around getting up at 5:30 a.m. on a regular basis. Listen, it takes getting used to. 5:45 is a lie-in for me. Bed by 10:30, up by 5:30, sorting the little one out and then setting him up so he's getting ready for nursery. It's crazy. Okay, let's move. So I found a couple articles, actually, and I sent them across. I don't know if you managed to read any of them, Sasha, but there was one... which is, I'm going to start on a bit of a negative article, actually. And it's the one that was called Teaching a Family Unfriendly Profession. And they were saying, I think a lot of people feel like teaching is great if you've got a family, because you've got the holidays, you've got the summers, you've got the half terms that coincide. It seems like a really kind of compatible profession for having a family. And this person in the article is saying that it's a family unfriendly profession. Let me know what you think in the chat. Is teaching a family friendly or unfriendly? And what they'll say, we're going to just go a little bit by bit, and then we're going to have some comments to see what they say. So they start by talking about parenthood is a job that requires us to give up almost all of our time and energy for the well-being of another. Teachers are, by their nature, we're givers. The desire to help others, to give something of ourselves up for their inspiration, their betterment, is at the heart of belonging in a classroom. So we find ourselves giving and giving and giving. Does that resonate with you, Sasha?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, teaching is such a socially conscious profession. You wouldn't do it unless you really cared about giving everything to it. And obviously the very nature of parenting is the same. But, you know, there's only so much in the cup and you can't pour and pour and pour before there's nothing left. So, yeah, it's absolutely challenging because you want to do the best by all of those people. And then when you have, you know, the parental element in it, one of those people is yours. So, you know, at least one of those people are yours. So it's a real struggle. Certainly being a parenting friendly profession was something I believed as a younger woman. And one of the reasons I really wanted to teach. And I perhaps wouldn't agree that it is as friendly as I would have expected. But, you know, we get the holidays, don't we? So
that's the thing. Does the rough with the smooth? Does it all kind of,
exactly.
Is it all okay? Exactly. Because we get the 6 weeks with our kids. I don't know. I feel like I feel like genuinely knowing that we've got the 6 weeks of Christmas, the Easter, the half terms, everything, does it make it all worth it? I'm tempted to say yeah. I think that 6 weeks, not many people in many jobs. I don't know how many people we've got in the live studio, either on Twitter or YouTube or Facebook, who are obviously parents, but maybe work in a profession that isn't teaching. So therefore, when their kids are off for 6 weeks in summer, they're still having to work. I can't imagine it. I've never not had a summer holiday.
That must be. Yeah, they have to have wraparound care and family helping them out, and all of your annual leave is trying to figure out how to look after children. I imagine that must be really tricky.
Indeed. Let me know if you are in the chat and you've got, or if you're listening on YouTube or Facebook or Twitter, then tweet me. It's at Khalil_R91. If you want to tweet me, I've got my Twitter open so I can see any kind of live tweets. Again, if you're in the conversation, if you're a teacher and a parent and want to call in and share your experiences, please do. It's a live open talk show. I'm joined by Sasha White at the moment, and we're just starting to talk about the trials and tribulations of trying to juggle being a teacher and being a parent. This article went on and I couldn't believe the kind of things she was saying. So she said, one little bit, she said, I've held my pale and whimpering baby as she struggles for breath in a stark hospital room while emailing cover one-handed from my phone. Reading between the lines, it seems like maybe when she was potentially giving birth, or just her baby was unwell, she had to be still emailing cover from her mobile phone, which just, if this was what communicated to her school, the fact that they still asked her to send in cover is absolutely ridiculous, in my opinion. I don't know how you feel about that.
Absolutely, of course. You need to have those structures in place departmentally and school-wide that support staff. You know, we all have lives as well. And sometimes there are emergencies and sometimes there are situations, and the school and departments should be able to step in those. And for the most part, they do. But I think we're also potentially guilty of wanting to ensure we've done it ourselves. I know I've certainly sent cover quite recently done a Teams lesson from a hospital bed. And I could have just said no. I probably should have just said no.
Pause. You did it. Pause. One second. You said pause. You said you've done a Teams lesson from a
Yes. I wasn't terribly ill or anything. I was just having to. I just happened to have an iron transfusion, which is not super traumatic or anything. It's just sitting there, having iron put into you. But there, you know, we were still doing remote learning, and there wasn't anybody available to take the register and start the class off. So I just did it for two of them. And it was fine until there was a lady who was not in a good shape at all in the bed opposite me. And there's me talking about Stalin as a dictator. And that was then a bit awkward. So I tried to wrap it up quickly. But yeah, we go above and beyond sometimes, don't we?
Because, I was going to say, I applaud your commitment, but I also question how I could. Listen, there are certain situations where I'm thinking you just got to say no. But I feel like a lot of teachers, especially the more kind of like, I don't know if the word is conscientious or just the most committed teachers, find it so hard to say no, because that guilt, for whatever reason, not if you didn't do that lesson, you would think, I've let what, 30 kids down, for example. But sometimes, listen, I'm going to tell you now, if you're in a hospital bed, there is no need to be doing any lessons whatsoever.
Absolutely. No, of course. And if it was, if it was my daughter that was unwell, you know, I'd be like, sorry, my attention's elsewhere. But I don't know, we can occasionally be slightly, you know, we can be martyrs a bit, can't we, as teachers?
Definitely.
We're always so conscientious, almost to a fault. There is that element.
I think I'm the same. I've had to train myself. I don't know if you guys in the chat agree, but I've had to train myself to kind of, so I have to leave school at a certain time so that I can actually go and pick up my son. If I don't pick him up, worst case, like he's at my parents at that point, so it's not the worst case scenario, but I feel like I've got a responsibility to make sure I'm on time for them, so I've got to lock off the computer, shut down everything, actually leave work 5:30, 5:35 latest, otherwise I feel like I'm like overburdening my parents. I'm thinking overburdening, I'm sure they'll be absolutely fine. And then I've had situations where I'm making phone calls from the car on the drive to my parents' house because there was an issue at school that I needed to follow up with the parents. I was thinking, if I don't follow up with them today and I leave it till tomorrow morning, then I haven't done my job properly. And all these pressures are kind of just mounting on. And you're thinking, right, I'm just going to
I've done parental phone calls while my daughter's in the bath. Like, it's sometimes bizarre, isn't it?
Let me know in the chat, where's the most kind of, I say random, but the most ridiculous circumstances you've still made parental contact. For me, I think genuinely, I think I've not gone much further than just whilst driving. Let me just put a caveat in here. I'd set the call up before I started driving, and then I started driving before people think I was just driving there, typing the number away on my phone. But it was a long phone conversation. It took me most of my journey. Where is the most kind of, not even outrageous, but just you look back and think, wow, I've put in a lot of effort here making a phone call in this situation. I think you top it. If your child is in the bath and you're making a phone call with your little one splashing about in the background, I rate you. I do rate you. It's very committed.
Parents are great about it as well. You just say, just so you know, I'm in this situation. I'm happy to talk to you, but there's splashing going on in the background. Just be aware. And they're lovely about it.
At the bus stop, just topping on when you're going popping your oyster on. I think that as well, it's a difficult one when you're at the bus stop because you're going to be surrounded by random passers-by and everything. I guess I don't know how many people are the same. I don't like people hearing my phone conversations. I feel a bit weird about it. And especially depending on what the phone conversation was, I guess. If you're on the packed bus, and you know when, I've not been a bus in ages, but you're in a packed bus and then someone's having a phone conversation and everyone on the bus is listening, but obviously trying to look like they're not listening. I don't want to be in that situation with phone conversation with schools. But I think that's, I've never done a phone conversation.
Conversation about behavior or something.
Yeah. And then people realize you're a teacher and it gets a bit awkward. Like there's a response. I wasn't on the bus. Just at the bus stop. Nobody in earshot. Fair enough. And then I imagine you said, oh, sorry, got to go. I've got to hop on the bus now. So then that was the end. That's a nice way to kind of end the conversation. I find you got to be tactical, haven't you? When you're saying, oh, yep, just getting home now. So I'm going to have to end the conversation. That's a tactical way of ending the conversation without feeling like you're cutting it off prematurely. But they understand. I think parents do appreciate when you say, oh, yeah, I'm just quickly making a call. I know it's 5:30, 6, 6:30, whatever. They do appreciate it. We do often go above and beyond. And I think it's just because we are givers as a profession. Mm. We are definitely givers. Okay. So later on, this woman goes on. Again, it's a very kind of negative article, but I just want to talk about it. She starts talking about... she was just struggling. She was seeing her planning time being taken away. She was teaching more. She had a pension reduced. The school's budget was cut, but she kept on giving. And then she said, she was going on to talk about how her sanity was being taken away. It's a very, 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 very kind of poignant article. And then she's been treated for stress and anxiety. And she's witnessed her colleagues suffer similarly because of all this pressure of trying to please everyone. And first and foremost, you need to look after your kids. But I think as a parent, like you're not even doing that correctly, then or you're not being able to give your all to looking after your kids, that can have a knock-on effect and a bit of a cycle. Have you ever felt, Sasha, that you could always give more to your kids? You feel that? Do you get that guilt?
Absolutely, both in teaching and in parenting. I think I look at both because I give a lot to both. There are times when the balance goes one way or the other, but I kind of trust that at some point it will shift back again. So I know, you know, if we take next week, week five of term five in the middle of CAGs, TAGs, it's a bin fire at the moment, isn't it, really? It's a lot going on. And I definitely know my daughter is not going to get the attention she deserves this week. And that's rough. And there was definitely a time when I would be really hard on myself with that. And the parental guilt is pretty strong. However, I know 2 weeks later, there'll be a half term and there will be time that is just hers and it's totally devoted. So I don't think you can ever give everything to both of those things because, I mean, how in any profession, you can't give everything to parenting or everything to your job because we don't have everything to give. And at some point you have to keep something back. So I think it's just accepting the shortfalls and know that you're doing your best.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think you put it nail on the head. I think it's we as teachers, I've always been a teacher that I accepted if you want to be a perfectionist, you'll never stop working. If your aim is to get everything perfect, everything right, and have everything done, you're never going to stop working. And it's the same with parenting. I think you have to accept, like you said, that things are going to fall by the wayside. And that can happen in your home life. That can happen at school. And you need to, I think I always say to people when I've been talking about them, if you can look back on your day and know that you've kind of carried out your duties with integrity. You've prioritized as best as you can. You've tried to manage your time. You haven't just kind of dossed about the whole day. You've actually tried to be as productive as possible, but just task E, F, and G never managed to get done before you left. Maybe it's time to let task E, F, and G and leave it for tomorrow morning, because your kids need your time as well. And I think I've had to, I've become very, I've tried to like compartmentalize things and said, I will get as much done in school as I can. Because when I go home, I've only got, for my son, we're talking, I pick him up at around 6-ish. We have to drive back to where we live, which can take about 40, 45 minutes. By the time we're home, just before 7, his bedtime's 7:30. So I'm looking at 45 minutes of kind of daddy time, where most of it is spent just getting him in the bath and cleaning him down and then putting him to bed. So
it's
throughout
just
the
wrangling
week,
the evening routine, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I'm thinking, there's no way on earth I'm not gonna get home and just work straight away and not have that time with him. Because if I don't see him in a day, it feels quite strange to not see him in a whole day. It feels quite weird. And then I've just got to try and make up for lost time on the weekend. I wonder in the chat again. Yeah, so people,
sometimes good enough is good enough, right? Sometimes that has to be it.
No, definitely. People in the chat, if you're a teacher and a parent, or if you're on kind of Facebook or Twitter or YouTube, on average, how many hours do you spend with your child, like maybe on the week? Let's talk about the working week, because of course, weekends going to be more. But working week, how many hours do you spend actually with your child Monday to Friday? I'm intrigued. Like I said, for me, it's maximum, if we exclude the drive, because the drive is not really spending time. The drive is me focused on the road, playing some music, him in the background, rattling away his shake or whatever he's doing, falling asleep. So it's not really time spent. So I'd say roughly no more than an hour, I'd say, per day. And that's crazy just to think about, on 5 days a week, I'm only spending an hour with him. So you guys in the chat, let me know if you're a teacher and a parent, or if you're on Facebook or YouTube or Twitter, tweet me, how many hours do you spend with your little one Monday to Friday? Because I wonder if people manage to spend more today. I know there's some people that do that, kind of leave school very early so that they can be home early. But then I think they work, I don't know what the balance is. Do you work with anyone, Sasha, that you know leave school extra early so they can get home with their kids? Do you know anyone like that?
I try to one day a week so that I'll have more of an afternoon with her. And then it just means it's usually a Friday. And then I know I've got more work to do the evening and then the weekend. But yeah, I definitely have worked with colleagues who are straight out the door. And certainly before I was a parent, oh God, I cringe to think I was probably really snooty thinking, oh, they're leaving soon, aren't they? The rude awakening.
Pause there, because I've had conversations about this. Why is it? Why are we like this in teaching, where we look at someone who leaves early, and even though in the back of our mind we may assume that they're going to go home and continue working. I know this happened in my previous school, where there was kind of like that the side eye, where you look at the person who's out the door at 4 thinking, oh, you're off pretty early, don't you work? That kind of vibe. And it's just crazy that we know it exists, but we all still do it sometimes. And I think it's so toxic.
It's cultural, isn't it? You're right, it's so toxic. I once got called out on it. I think I said to someone, oh, so-and-so always leaves right on the bell. And a teacher who is a few years older than me and had kids, she turned around to me and said, do you not know this? Do you not know that person has children? This is what their life is, and told me. And I was well and truly put in my place as a young teacher, and, you know, rightly so. And yeah, from that moment onwards, it made me think twice before having an opinion on anyone who leaves at whatever time. People manage their time how they need to manage it.
That's it, isn't it? That's it. I think the school I'm working at the moment, they made a real statement at the beginning to say, we're not going to prescribe or be very prescriptive about when you need to be at work, because everyone's going to manage their working responsibilities, fit around their other priorities in their life. And that was really refreshing. I've worked in schools where they didn't really say it, but you could tell that they were kind of the people that were working till, I don't know, the school's open till, the time that your school's open till, I think sends a message to staff, doesn't it? If your building is open until 6:30, 7, that sends a kind of unspoken message to staff, being like, we expect you to be here, kind of vibe. And we're open, guys, you can stay and work. And it's, who wants to be at work at 7 p.m.? Not me, I'll tell you that now. I do not want to be at work at 7 p.m. I'm glad my school building closed at 5:30, which means we have to be out. And that was, again, refreshing. But there's been a lot of people in the chat when we started talking about this. So we had Miss Kato Stem was saying that this makes me really sad because I spend an hour with him before nursery, but it's spent getting him ready for bed and breakfast. And by the time he gets back home, there's only about 30 minutes before he goes to bed. And I think if you kind of like tally that up and compare it with the amount of time you're spending with, inverted commas, other people's kids, as we want to call it, you look at the balance, you're like, oh my word. And it does make people, I can imagine how it can make people feel really sad. We have Karen in the chat. She's saying, she's out of school 30 minutes after students, it's a bad day. So Karen's are straight out of the door. Have you ever had, Karen, let me know in the chat, anyone, have you ever had that kind of awkward conversation where someone implies that you're not working hard enough because you leave early? Let me know. I wonder, and how did you handle that conversation if it did happen? Let me know, Karen. Jen said, I am that teacher that leaves on time. Hello, well. And then she said, my life is my family, not work. As much as I love teaching, my priority is my family always. That's the way it needs to be. I agree.
We need to prioritize that. Focusing on your career is looking after your family. So as a single parent, the hours that I put into work are for her, because it's, you know, it's progressing my career and therefore being able to provide for her. So I have that balance sometimes, and when I think, God, I'm doing a lot of hours, the other side of that is it's also for her as well. I mean, yeah, it's a tricky balance.
It is a tricky balance. I think if you took it to its kind of extremes and you said, right, you can either work all the time and bring in a lot of money and then provide for your kids but not see them, I think no one would take it to the extreme in that sense. But I get what you mean. All the work we do, we work to pay the bills, we work to support the family, I get that. But then my counter argument is, I guess, your pay in teaching, regardless of whether you worked for 7 hours in the day or 10 hours in the day, your pay is not going to increase. So I guess that's the, unless you take, of course, the more work you do, maybe you've got more opportunities for career progression, etc. Mm-hmm. But in the short term, Monday to Friday, whether I work 6 hours and chip off home early and actually do nothing at home, or whether I work for 8-9 hours and do more work at home, I'm going to get paid the same amount. So in the short term, you can say that you're putting in the hours for providing for your family. But genuinely, if you put in fewer hours, you get paid the same amount. That's my cynical view on it, I guess.
That's a really interesting point. When you said to me, what do you think the impact of being a parent has had on my teaching? My first thought was my productivity, because I don't want to spend time. I want to be efficient with that time. So what would have taken me a long time once upon a time, whether it's planning or marking, I just faff about an awful lot less.
Yeah.
And that way there's more time at home.
Agreed. I think, yeah, I think in my early career, I definitely was a bit of a CBA, kind of can't be bothered, faff about for a little period of time and then get back to it. But I guess every kind of working moment, especially because I try not to work at home unless it's on like a Sunday evening, but I try not to. So I'm making sure in my role, I don't teach as much because I've got a kind of pastoral role. So anytime I'm not teaching, I'm trying to make sure it's all systems go to get as many of the things done as possible. And I think my productivity is massively improved and my efficiency is massively improved, especially now I've got a son, because there's just the added thing, right? I'm doing it now, like you said, for a reason. I can get as much done at work so that I give myself the time, whether it's weekends, to not think, oh, I've got so many things I still need to do by Monday that I didn't manage to get done on Friday because I dossed about a little bit on Friday. When now my Fridays are all systems go, when the other members of colleagues are maybe having a bit of a wind down, I'm still going to make sure that I can spend my Saturdays and my Sundays with my son and my family without the kind of looming guilt of thinking, oh, I've got something that was due first thing Monday and I never managed to get it done. So I think it's definitely made me more productive as a practitioner, definitely. I wonder if people in the chat, so the question that we asked on Twitter, there was a big tweet, I might even go through some of the responses as well. So on the Teachers Talk Radio Twitter, so that's at TT Radio 2021, they asked a question that was actually very relevant to this show, and that wasn't by chance, it was something that we worked on in the background. So they asked the question, and the question was very broad, and it's just said, how has being a parent affected your teaching? So I ask you guys, same question in the chat, as I'm going to go through some of the tweets in response, and I ask you, Sash, the same thing. I think we've answered it a lot, but maybe you've got some other points on it. So the question is, how has being a parent affected your actual teaching? And by that, I imagine your actual practice, or maybe your interactions. how you maybe see your role in the classroom. Maybe you can narrow it down to parents' evenings. Who knows? But how has being a parent affected your teaching is the question. So you guys in the chat, let me know. And Sasha, hopefully in my ramble, I've given you enough time to think of an answer.
No, that's fine. To that I have question. Pre-prepared notes, don't worry.
Go on,
so
Sasha.
Definitely my number one thing is that it's made me a much more productive teacher, human being, you know, everything. Everything from my laundry to my planning is a lot more efficient now that I'm a parent because you just don't have the time to waste. I think it's given me a greater focus on my career, admittedly not in the first couple of years. When you're in that baby phase, which you will know, it is it's so time consuming and overwhelming, and that whole new bubble of love is a lot to kind of team with teaching. So, but since then, perhaps more. But certainly in terms of my teaching practice, I think it's changed the way that I interact with parents. Particularly if you have a challenging situation, you know, have a complaint about a member of staff or something that's happened in a lesson. I once would have been perhaps more defensive of the member of staff involved. And also now I just think that parent just loves their child. They just want to be heard. They just want to defend that child. That kind of feral, kind of primal love and protectiveness you have for your child, I have a much better understanding of that now. So when someone is cross about something, you know that is not about you. And in the same way, when a student is really lashing out in a classroom, you know that's not about you. There's something else there. And sometimes you just need to give it a moment to let them have their say and then just reapproach it with empathy. I think I'm better at that now than I was before as a parent.
100%. I've worked in pastoral for... this is now my fifth year of having a kind of head of year pastoral style role. And then definitely the way I did my head of year role in my previous school compared to now, and especially now that I've got my son, I take the responsibility a lot. It's different. You mentioned the word empathy, and that's huge for me now. And I feel like every time I have an interaction with a kid, my school's only got a couple year groups. I remember we're in new schools. So I'm interacting with younger kids, your sevens, your eights kind of thing. So I feel like every time I'm talking to them about, I feel like it's a trial run for the kind of conversation I may have to have with my son when he gets a lot older. And I find that I'm much more in tune and more empathetic. It doesn't mean I'm dropping my standards, but it means I feel like I talk to maybe in a different way than I did 2 or 3 years ago. And there was a tweet in the thread on the Twitter thread from Laura McConnell, and this got quite a lot of likes. And she said, I always think of the children as somebody's babies. I was a parent before I was a teacher, so I've always approached children as multidimensional characters that have a life away from school, and how we see them is a tiny part. I treat them how I want my children treated. And that was a very kind of powerful tweet there that got up to 32 likes. So clearly it was quite popular on the Twitter sphere. And I think that I treat them how I want my children to be treated is, and you can only do that once you're a parent, I guess. You can say how I want my hypothetical children to be treated, but once you've got your own child, and if you transpose your child to being in someone else's classroom, then you do something right. How would I speak to this kid? How would I want another teacher to talk to my child about this issue? Let me then replicate that with these kids. I think that's something that I think I subconsciously do as well now. And I think, are you the same?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I'm not sure that it's necessarily didn't exist before I was a parent. I definitely don't think you need to be a parent to be able to have empathy for children. Absolutely not. But it gives you perhaps a different insight. I think my interaction with students might not have changed that much, but perhaps more for me, the interaction with parents has changed. Mm.
Yeah, tell me more. So can you give me an example by any chance?
Yeah, just that idea of where you have perhaps I might intervene with parental contact sooner than I might have. If you've got a student who's not completing work, underperforming, poor behaviour, I might just pick up the phone more readily now just to pop a line and say, do you know this is happening? Is everything okay? How can we support? And I think perhaps part of it is also that bit older as well, that bit more experienced. When you're a very young teacher, I think sometimes that interaction with parents feels quite daunting because they, you know, your parents of a 16-year-old and you're, say, 22, that feels different. But yeah, I'm much more ready to pick up the phone now and intervene much quicker.
Yeah, I think they always say that parental contact is the number one way to either, well, in terms of positive, negatives, or just neutral, is the number one way to keep in touch. Again, my pastoral role, I used to call parents a lot. And before I was a teacher, I think the conversation may be slightly different to now. I think my approach is a bit more, I think what you mentioned about how can we support what's going on, as opposed to just so you know, your child hasn't done four pieces of homework this week. He needs to sort it out kind of approach. Because clearly if the child's missing homework that regularly, there could be, and then this is with me with my kind of safeguarding hat on, there could be circumstances going on in that child's kind of wider life, or just life, I should say, that's affecting them. And it's weird, I think, when you're a non-parent teacher, sometimes you don't always, your first instinct isn't, oh, maybe there's something going on in the family life. Your first instinct is, I need this child to get my homework done. I need to make sure the parent knows they're not doing my homework. So I'm going to follow the step-by-step to make sure I call the parent, tell them to get the homework done, and then I've done my job. And I think some teachers now take a much more sensitive approach, which can be beneficial to find out, right, just so you're aware, I've had a bit of issues with homework. Can I just check, first of all, let's see if everything okay. Is there anything we could do to support? Can we do anything in school? Because I know home life and everything is difficult. I think when teachers used to ask parents and say, right, you check in the planners, you check in there. And some parents are like, no, I've not had time. Maybe some teachers who aren't parents can't really empathize with that. But I think once you become a parent and you're still a teacher, you realize the can't have time is so real. It's so true. You've got a million, like when you're just trying to get home to sort out the food and the dinner and make sure no one's going to pick up anything off the floor and put it in their mouth and making sure this is going on and making sure everyone's going to get ready and they're fed and everything else. Maybe the last thing you're thinking about is, right, where's the planner? Let me check the planner to make sure they've done the homework. Because most parents, what they do is say, you done your homework? Kid goes, yep. And then before you know it, that's the end of their checking, because that's all the time they've got to dedicate to it. And you realize that much more when you become a parent yourself, because there's a disconnect beforehand sometimes because it seems so easy. Of course, you're going to check the plan. Of course, you're going to see if they've done the work that they've been told to do. But when you're a parent in that situation, boy, it's a different story.
Look what you mentioned earlier about the amount of time you have in the evening with your son. If that time is not just, you know, dinner, bath, bed, which it is when they're little, if it's then, you know, trigonometry and geography, that is not a lot of time to get all of those things done. So there's a really good chance that you're cooking the dinner while they're doing the homework. And do you know what that homework is? I can completely see how that goes by the wayside. You know, I am certain that at some point I'm going to be the mum who forgets the bake sale or the non-uniform day or whatever it might be, because it's so easy to see now how those things might be forgotten.
Yeah. I was going to say, people in the chat, let me know. We've got a number of people listening. Let me know, what do you have? So for me, I've got a child who's nearly one, so I can't really relate to the homework situation. But those of you that may have children who are kind of primary school age or even secondary school age, how do you manage their kind of checking that they're on top of their work at the same time balancing your commitments in the house, wherever your commitments are in the evening? Do you have any strategies? Is there a routine that the kids are in? I don't know. Do the kids come straight in and show you their kind of diary for the evening on their homework? Is the school, has the school got a system that informs you about what they've got coming up, so it does the work for you? I don't know. I'm just wondering, because I don't have a child who's kind of school age, so I'm not interacting with the home life, the homework, home life balance at the moment. But if you are, let me know in the chat. How do you manage it? If you're a teacher and you know your kid's got homework, how do you manage that? Do you have time to sit down with them, or is it let them get on with it themselves and hope they're going to do the best that they can, and then you're just going to ask them how they did and they say, yep, did it all. And you'll say, did you really? Yep, did it. Next thing you know, you get a phone call saying it's incomplete. I wonder if that happens. I've got someone in the chat saying, I get little one to always go through a plan for the homework, whether it's a presentation or math. So I get it. So I imagine the onus. So you ask the child what the actual plan is, what you're going to do for homework today. And they say this. I think that's good to hold them to account. There's a lot of kids I know that I teach whose parents don't go through that rigor with them. And it's, you can see it in the kind of quality of their homework, because this presentation is poor or it's tatty or who knows. But you can just tell the parent just didn't have the time in their priorities. Unfortunately, their kid doing their homework is not number one. And it shows, and it's sad, but that's life. That's life sometimes, and that's parenting. Yeah, you just got to prioritize, I guess. And we as teachers have to always remember that there's more going on than just the kid in front of us. And in their life, I tell you now, one piece of maths homework may not be the most important thing when they go home. We need to step back sometimes.
Particularly when they're at secondary level and they have, you know, X number of subject teachers, every one of them who thinks the homework they set is the most important thing in the world. Sometimes it can't be.
Yeah, it is crazy. It is crazy. We put so much, there's so much expectation and pressure on young people with all their like three homeworks a day, two homeworks a day, four homeworks a day. And each teacher's then having a moan at you when you've not done it. Like we just said, as if it's the, like it should have been your number one priority. How have you not done my history recall practice on, I don't know, name a history topic, Nazi Germany. Don't know why I went for that. How could you not have done it? Ridiculous. I gave you two whole days to get your Nazi Germany homework done and you've not done it. Outrageous. I'll see you in detention. And we just, some teachers just can't, they just don't think. It's that their world is obviously their history class, so they're gonna prioritize that. But we always have to take a step back and remember that. I tell you now, in the grand scheme with what some kids have to deal with when they go home, history homework, maths homework, geography homework is not their priority. We have to hold our line and everything, but I don't agree with kind of like reprimanding the kid and making it sound like they've done a completely bad thing by not getting the homework done.
It's a balancing act, isn't it?
Definitely. There's been a big, so I think this is Amanda. Amanda's said, we've got Jen was going to say, yeah, it keeps her accountable as she set the plan herself. That's nice. Amanda's saying that I have a 14 and 11-year-old, and it was easier when they're both younger to manage at bedtime, mostly just reading and signing their reading journal. However, now they're getting older, it's easier for them to complete independently, but I check in. I always try to remember my children always come first. If I do for other people's children, I must do for my own. That's a very nice message. Our children do come first, and we know that. It sounds like a no-brainer, but I think we still have to keep reminding ourselves, especially in times when maybe we've realized that we haven't got something done for work because of maybe something that happened in the home. And then maybe your line manager's having a bit of not a moan, but maybe they're pulling you up on it because you missed a deadline. But really, something happened at home that took priority. And I think I personally know I have the kind of candor to say, I apologize, but I had to deal with something at home and in the grand scheme, it took priority. So I apologize for missing the deadline. I'll get it done as soon as I can. But yesterday evening was a tough one at home. I'd say that to my line manager if that was my scenario. I think some teachers wouldn't, for fear of whatever. I don't know, maybe not being seen as being capable of doing their job with all things considered. But I know if something happened to my kids, I mean, I couldn't get the work done for work, I'd say, sorry, I didn't get it done, but there was an urgent thing at home that took priority, and that no line manager should ever reprimand you or think ill of you for that.
I wonder, Khalil, if it's the same for women, because if as a mother, as a female teacher, if you go in and say, I have parenting responsibilities, it is a very different dynamic. And there is a certain kind of respect that's given to a father who's put their children first. But when it's a mother, I think there is more of a tendency. Yes, we're talking more broadly. And it's not all the time, of course. But I think there is an element of slightly writing off of, oh, she's a mom then. And there's a lot of weight for it, for a woman to say, I can't do this because of this parenting responsibility. Because it changes the way that you are viewed at work, whether we would like to make it this or not. But it is different for mothers.
Yeah, no, you make it. Listen, I'm glad we're having this conversation, because it's something that I wouldn't have. Well, of course, I'm not a mum, so I wouldn't have considered it. But I wonder if people in the chat can empathize with this. I've seen a lot. You're getting a lot of agreement in the chat here, Sasha, from all the mums, because it is. And it's a kind of harsh kind of patriarchy that we're trying to knock down, but still kind of pervade society at the moment. That what you said about a father saying, oh, I couldn't do it because I had to do some of my kids, they feel, and maybe the listener thinks, oh, you've gone above and beyond. Ah, fair play to you. Well, fair play to you. Well done. I understand. Mum says the same thing. They think, hold on, you're the mum. You should, what do you think they're kind of subconscious is telling them?
I think more than just subconscious. I've had the conversations. There is that element that, oh, you're just a mum, or that certainly in SRT, sometimes there's this view that, oh, well, that person's a mum first. I've definitely heard conversations where people have discussed someone having a child in reference to whether they would be ideal for a promotion or a position because, you know, they are a mother. It's shocking, some of the things you hear. I mean, you just look at the statistics. So, you know, 75% of mothers work versus 92% of fathers. And 28.5% of mothers reduce their working hours when they have children versus just 4.8% of men.
Yeah.
You know, there is an expectation, and, you know, there's a lot of parameters around that, finances, etc. But there is an expectation that if there are parental duties, the lion's share of those are by a woman, and therefore that then has a knock-on effect in terms of how you are viewed within your career, because if you are a working mother, the school, SLT, whoever it might be, knows that ultimately you have a different priority first.
Yeah.
In the same way that I think is maybe not the expectation for a father. So you said that both you and your partner are teachers.
We are indeed, yeah.
So if your son was unwell and had to be off nursery, is there a more obvious one of you who would then take the time off work?
I don't know. We haven't come across that yet.
Yeah.
That hasn't happened.
Without fail, it is always me that has to. And yes, it's a slightly different situation because I'm a single parent, but, you know, I do co-parent. But the assumption is always, without fail, that it will be me. And I think for most teachers I know, and it is not always the way, of course, but broadly speaking, it tends to be the mums that take on more of the parental roles.
You make a good, as you're, my brain is ticking over the moment thinking, what would I, if little man, so I'm just thinking tomorrow morning, tomorrow's a bad example because my partner's part-time. And let's go for Tuesday morning, little man's unwell, too unwell to go to nursery. Who would stay? I'd honestly think I wouldn't not say, oh, I'll stay at home, you go to, I think I genuinely, because like I said, my partner works part-time, so she's only working 3 out of the 5 days. So it make math, even if I go to like, let's go mathematically, it makes more sense for me to take the day and look after him so she can go to work, because she only has that as a proportion of her time at work, that is a bigger proportion. So it makes sense for me to do it. I don't think, go on.
But the fact that she also works part-time, is that not part of it?
How do you mean? Go on.
The, you know, when we have teaching couples or teaching parents, or even just parents, the majority of time when there is a step down in work for childcare, it is the woman that does the step down.
It is true. No, you're right.
And I'm just, again, this isn't me being critical of you, of course. You know, I mean, you look after your son, obviously. But yeah, it's just that assumption. But that then does feed into how teachers, female teachers, are viewed, because there's that, oh, do we want her because she might have to go off with a child or do X, Y, and Z?
It's got really deep and reflective. I'm sitting here. I don't even know that gif where Batman is just stroking his chin. I'm doing that Batman stroking gif at the moment, just thinking. I'm like, and it's one of those things, I think, I can't remember if we had the conversation about who would go part-time or whether, like you said, it was just assumed. I'm trying to think. I feel like if we did, I feel like, yeah. And this is me just holding my hands up with some integrity. Just there. I think I may have just assumed that she would go. If any one of us were going to go part-time, it's going to be my partner. And now I'm just thinking,
I remember that conversation.
And I'm just thinking, I'm sitting there feeling like a bad guy. I could have, there's no reason why I couldn't have gone. But yeah, wow, it's got really deep at 2 p.m. on a Sunday lunch show. This was supposed to be jovial.
Apologies.
don't worry about it.
Instead, shall I tell you about the time that I was remote teaching and I looked up and my daughter was outside wearing nothing but a tutu, jumping on a trampoline in the rain, and I said, "Sorry, kids, I have to go."
Oh wow! She just went outside, took herself outside.
Took herself outside in just a tutu. Don't know where her clothes went. She was just wearing a tutu. Yeah. Just jumping in the rain on a trampoline. So you know,
living her best life
as well. Yeah, she was.
Sasha, listen. There's a couple more comments. I know you've got to kind of go around this time. There's a couple more comments just to kind of wrap it up. It's been a great listen. It's been a very, very, very good conversation. I've enjoyed this very much. So there's a couple more comments. Miss Kato Stem said she agreed that it was different for mums and mothers and fathers. Amanda came in with another, agreed. Someone said that some of my female teacher colleagues are astonished. I know what my kids' homework is, because clearly they don't have the time to find out or interact with as much what their kids are doing at home, because I haven't got the time. Miss Kato Stem said that my head of department jokingly said nobody's allowed to take maternity next academic year because she took it this academic year. But then, as she said, there's a hint of truth in every joke. So that's a head of department saying no one's allowed maternity leave because we've already had our kind of maternity leave quota. That's outrageous. It's one of those things I wouldn't even want someone to even jokingly say. And there's no excuse. Oh, I'm just joking, guys, just joking. Because I agree, behind every joke's a little bit of truth. Then we had someone called Rami saying, "I love you, teacher. I'm assuming you're talking to me. I'll take that compliment. Thank you very much. If you're talking to Sasha, Sasha will take that compliment as well." And he said, "Thank you for teaching me." Again, you're welcome. I don't know what I've taught you, but if you've enjoyed the show, thank you very much. And then Karen said that she can hear the contemplating from here. Listen, I was stroking my recently shaved off beard, because I was in deep contemplation thinking the patriarchy is within me and I need to make sure. Listen, as men, we need to reflect. The patriarchy is within. We need to reflect. We need to own it and we need to call it out and we need to be challenged on it. And
oh,
I'm glad
to be a fly on the wall for the conversation you have after.
we need to be challenged on it, just like we do with any other kind of systems or prejudices, everything else. We need to challenge the patriarchy that's kind of ingrained in us. Let me just call it out, and I thank you for doing that. And we got this, the hour has absolutely flown, Sasha. And all
it's
I can
been
say,
pleasure.
Thank you very much. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Thank you very much for coming on. I hope you can tune in, stay in the studio, tune in later on, tune in next week, all that kind of stuff, because we're trying to build this TT Radio family. But yeah, we're gonna go to news now. But Sasha, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for coming
thank you very
on
much
this
for
Sunday.
Having me. It was a pleasure.
No worries at all. Thank you very much.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News with Sebastian Sagnier.
I am Sebastian Sagnier, and this is Teachers Talk Radio with the news. The First Lady Jill Biden will be welcoming students across America to the nation's capital in a virtual trip to Washington, D.C. It is the latest virtual trip produced by Discovery Education, a global edtech leader. The Shadow's Child Poverty Minister, Wes Streeting, has warned that the government will face the impacts of what he called recent grotesque school budget cuts. He also revealed he is undergoing treatment for kidney cancer. The popular Netflix show, Sex Education, is rumoured to be aired this June or July. This comes at a time of much discussion over the government's new RSE curriculum that is now compulsory for all schools. This is Teachers Talk Radio, and that was the news with me, Sebastian Sagnier.
Live from London, this is the Sunday Lunch with Khalil Rouse on Teachers Talk Radio.
Whew, what an hour has passed already. It's the Sunday Lunch with me, Khalil Rouse, and the time is 2:03. If you've just tuned in, you've missed a great conversation about the trials and tribulations of parenting and teacherhood with parenting and teacherhood, teaching and parenthood. I'm going to run out of time, so I'm just going to ramble for a bit. Now we're going to talk about masks and the catch-up fund.
Live from London, this is the Sunday Lunch with Khalil Rouse on Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live on the Podbean app or desktop player. Just head over to www.podbean.com/lsw/TT Radio or search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TT Radio.
Hello, 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 and welcome back. 4 minutes past two, an hour has absolutely flown by. Let me know if you're still listening in the chat. Send me some love. Hope you enjoyed that conversation I just had with Sasha White. Can get some emojis in the chat. If you're listening live via potentially YouTube or Twitter or Facebook, then feel free to tweet either at TT Radio 2021 or tweet me directly at Khalil underscore R91 and let me know your thoughts. Up next, we're just going to talk about kind of current affairs. At the moment, there's a kind of two kind of recent articles that kind of took my interest. The first one is around masks and the fact that we've got these easing restrictions happening tomorrow. And Boris has come out and said in the news that there's going to no longer be a requirement for kids to wear face masks in schools as part of this kind of easing of lockdown. So I wonder what your thoughts are. Straight away in the chat, let me know based on that news alone. I'm sure you're aware of it anyway. What are your thoughts? This news article from the BBC, title is Face Masks No Longer Required in Classrooms. Let me know what you think. I think my kind of predecessor on the show, Graham Colum, who was on the show before me, he has a kind of Sunday brunch show. He was mentioning about it as well, and saying the thoughts on all these kind of new variants coming in, everything else, and we're still going on our road to freedom, if you want to call it that. And they're talking about face masks no longer required in schools. Let me know your thoughts. Is that something you're fine with? Have you got no issues with it? Have the kids kind of steadily stopped wearing them in your classrooms anyway? Are we complacent, is my question. Do you think we're becoming complacent now as COVID is no longer as rife as it were, or as rife as it was? Are we now becoming complacent with all the face coverings in schools? Do you find yourself being less vigilant, I wonder, is a question I'm asking. Those of you that work in schools, maybe teachers, non-teachers, do you think that you're still as vigilant with your hand washing and your social distancing? Or do you think you're coming a bit more complacent now that time is ticking on and we're all kind of looking forward to summer? So this article in front of me, so let me know in the chat any point now, because I've got no more scheduled callers. So if you want to keep me company on the airwaves, please feel free to call in at any time. Just click that phone button if you're on the Podbean app. If you're not on the Podbean app, then get the app. It's free. You get it from the App Store or Play Store, if you want to call it. You can download it and you can interact live and you can call in and talk to me, which will be a nice way to kind of round off your Sunday afternoon. So as I was saying on this article, we've got face masks will no longer be required in secondary school classrooms in England after the 17th of May, the Prime Minister Boris Johnson has confirmed. We know they've been recommended for a while, and there were concerns that masks obstruct communicating and learning. Let me know straight away, how have you found teaching kids wearing masks? Have you found it's a massive obstruction to the effectiveness of teaching and learning? Or have you found that it makes no major difference? I wonder. I know the main difference for me personally is sometimes I have to tell a kid to speak up because it's muffled. One thing that's happening a little bit that I know in other schools is maybe someone makes a silly noise in the classroom and you can't see the mouth moving, then it makes it more difficult to work out who it was that made the silly noise. Have you had anything like that in your school? My main question to you guys that are listening live or interacting in the chat, how have you found teaching kids wearing masks? Is it manageable? Can we just keep doing it and just prioritize safety and then we'll be absolutely fine, just keep doing it? Are they still learning and interacting and communicating well enough for lessons to progress? Let me know in the chat how you feel about the removal as well. Head teachers are warning, this is in the BBC article, head teachers are warning that the decision to remove masks was hard to reconcile with the evidence on safety. Interesting. And then we also talk about, so I think what the head teacher is talking about, the evidence at the moment of this growing new variant, the inverted commas Indian variant coming in, and how it's a bit more, maybe it's a bit more virulent than previous, who knows. I'm not going to act like I'm completely kind of tuned on all these, on the COVID developments. I found myself watching the COVID stats and news less so now. So I don't know if you guys are the same. I feel like I know less about how many cases, less about hospital admissions, less about everything. I feel like I'm just less interested in it. I'm still being vigilant. I'm still making sure my own hygiene is up to standards. But in terms of what's going on in the news about COVID, I don't really seek it out anymore. So I wonder if you guys are the same. Are you still checking the news on COVID, or are you again just losing interest in it a little bit? I wonder. Let me know. Someone in the chat has said, I think we've been too complacent. Oh, someone first has talked about catch up. We're going to come back to the catch up. But someone said, I think we've been too complacent about the fact that our students are masked. We communicate so much with our faces, and I can't wait to get rid of the masks. Definitely. I don't know. I think teaching with a mask is tough. I run out of breath sometimes. And I have to actually, as long, I think in my school, as long as you've got that kind of two meter plus gap, then they tell us that we're okay to kind of remove the mask and continue teaching. And then if you start to move around or you want to go circulate the room, obviously it's mask back on. But I know at some points I've been out of breath. I'm quite a passionate teacher, and there's me trying to whip up some energy about fractions with my mask on, and I'm just getting steamy mask, steamy glasses, and it's looking like a foggy mess. So I find it difficult to teach with a mask, and I try as best as possible, but sometimes I've got to take a step back and remove it for a bit just so I can breathe a little bit, because even wearing the blue disposables, I find it tough. So let me know if you're the same. Are you required to have the mask on teaching at all times, even if you're 2 meters away? Let me know. I do wonder how other schools are doing it, because I've not been able to get into other schools and see how you guys are doing it. So let me know in the chat. This is the only way I can find out. Albert in the chat has said, I can't wait till they're gone. They're uncomfortable, hard to communicate. I don't think it's hygienic. He said, students come into PE re-wearing masks. That's just been on the floor. What? Listen, but that's the thing. I do question the hygiene of it. Because we know we've got these disposable masks that I think people assume, or maybe the guidelines is they're supposed to be a one use and then bin. How many kids do you think are wearing disposable masks and binning it that day and getting a new one next day? Or are they just scrunching them up in their pocket and putting them back on their face the next day? I have questions, Albert, just like you, around the hygiene of it. I don't think people are being vigilant with the hygiene of their masks. I say people, I'm generalizing. I imagine there's a lot of people that aren't being hygienic with their face coverings, re-wearing masks, not washing them, and just wearing it because they know they have to. And the amount of germs and bugs, and I say bugs, germs and everything that's on the inside of the face covering. A good example, actually, in one of my lessons, we have a kind of stipulation that we want face coverings to just be plain, just so we don't get very loud, loud face coverings with slogans and all these kind of patterns and designs and stuff, so that face coverings become more of a functional use as opposed to a fashion show. That's our kind of justification. And there was a person that was wearing they brought in for once, like I think it was like a fancy, bright camouflage face covering. And then I said to the young man, I said, right, unfortunately, you're gonna have to, I'll get you another face covering that's plain. And what this boy did instinctively, he took off his face covering, turned it inside out and put it back on his face. He turned it, he didn't think, he just said, oh, it's white on the inside, so I'm just going to turn it inside out and put it back on his face. And I just looked at him, and he looked back at me. And I said, you realize what you've just done? He said, what? I said, you just put your face covering inside out. And he went, oh, oh, oh. And then before you know it, he was taking it back off and he threw it. And I said, well, that's the kind of thing. They're not thinking, they're just wearing it for wearing's sake. How many kids are really thinking about the kind of the sanitary aspect of making sure they don't re-wear the same face covering, washing the face covering? Who knows? A lot of comments in the chat to feed off here. Right. Same person has said, this is KGN. He's saying, it's horrendous. I found myself turning around and taking the mask down and shouting at a wall because it's easier for them to hear. I've never gone to that extent, but I think, I think my kind of teacher paranoia would kick in if I turned around. But I get you. It's horrendous teaching with a mask, especially if you're teaching full days. It gets too kind of, I don't know what the word is, but I just don't like the word foggy. It is foggy in there. You run out of oxygen. It's not pleasant having to teach the face covering on. I wear glasses, so that's an added problem. If my glasses aren't on top of the mask, then they become a foggy mess. It's all a problem. This is an important point. We got Faisal74 has said, my child is hearing impaired, and that has made it really difficult. I would have thought, correct me if I'm wrong, I remember reading about this. Schools should have been making some reasonable adjustments here to have teachers not wearing face coverings if there's a student in there that's hearing impaired, obviously because they can therefore lip read. Or I saw something in the news a while ago where they're wearing the kind of, I would never wear them, but the visors, I've never worn one, I should say, the visors that are clear so that you can still see the teacher's face. I'm very surprised to hear that you've got a hearing impaired child that's being taught by teacher that's still wearing kind of non-transparent face coverings, because that will be a hindrance to their learning. So I feel sorry for your child. I hope they make reasonable adjustments. I think you're well within your right to talk to the school about that and say you need to make reasonable adjustments here, because my child relies on reading lips and lip sync and everything else, and you're not allowing them to do so. I think you need to get in touch with the school about that one. Karen said, I'm happy to have masks off, keeping my windows wide open and keeping my mask on when roaming. Still be hand sanitizing, clean down tables, however. Agreed. Yeah, I think masks off. So you're saying you're happy to have masks off. I think you had that slogan now about getting fresh air in. We know that is very important. I think, yeah, keeping fresh air circulating through the room and doors open as much as possible. If we keep doing that, that is more important than making sure kids have all the masks on. Because listen, if someone in the room did have COVID in the room, the fact they're wearing a mask alone, and if there was a closed door and windows closed, the COVID is going to spread. But if you've got no mask, but the windows are open and doors are open, allowing the fresh air to carry the bacteria out and everything else, I'm not going to act like I'm a science expert. I don't have the right terminology, but I think that's very important. I think we need to keep, especially in these summer months where we've got warmer weather, keep those doors open, keep that ventilation. Masks off, cool, because I don't know about the kind of the benefit we're having at the moment of masks on, compared to where they're off and we have the ventilation. Who knows? Graham Collum, one of my good kind of co-hosts, colleagues, what you want to call them. He's saying, agree. Many, many reuses, I imagine. They are. The kids are not. They're not binning the masks. They're not. They're just going to reuse the same mask. And if they did have, someone did unfortunately have some sort of illness, they'll just be breathing back in the bad bacteria again. Sasha's saying, we all want them off eventually, but it's more important to be safe. Agreed. Aiden saying, we can have masks off during the lessons as long as 2 meter distance is maintained. I imagine you're talking about teachers themselves. We're the same. If you're teaching from the front and the class is 2+ meters back, we have the masks off. I teach with the mask off. But as soon as I'm going to circulate, as I was saying, it's masks back on. Sasha saying, they definitely need to replace disposables. Seema's laughing. I think she's probably laughing at my comment about the boy who turned his face mask inside out and slapped it back on his face and felt no way about it until I told him, listen, mate, you know what you've just done? And then the penny dropped and he realized he just put the, I don't want to call it, the exposed side of his face mask back onto his nose and his mouth and just breathed in whatever was on there. If you saw his reaction, it was absolutely hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. Yeah, Seema, listen, Seema said, I think adults are just as bad with face mask etiquette. I agree. I think human beings are just as bad. We are with face mask etiquette. Let me know who's going to say that they've got exceptional face mask etiquette in the chat. Let me know if you're on YouTube, Twitter, whatever. Have you got good face mask etiquette still? Or are we very complacent? I feel like we're getting to that stage. And then I've seen, yeah, Faisal saying that. I can't remember what you were saying that in response to, unfortunately. My daughter can't hear rather than discussion either. It sounds really harsh on your daughter. I feel sorry for her kind of experience at the moment, because everyone's got muffled voices with their masks. So that is a shame. More comments are coming in thick and fast. Thank you very much for interacting with me. It makes my job a whole lot easier than just talking to myself. Karen saying, absolutely. The ventilation, and it reduces transmission, of course. This person said, okay, we've got someone who works in Spain. Welcome. Someone that works in Spain saying there's no chance of masks coming off anytime soon. Windows and doors open, mask on at all times. Yes, definitely hard to hear some children talking, but otherwise no real issue. Agreed, I don't think it's causing a massive issue. My classes and kids are still learning. It's not impeding their learning. Of course, we've got the person who's talking about their daughter who's hard of hearing. I think that learning experience is being hindered, and it's a shame. Tim is saying, only been wearing masks on entrance and exit and teaching from behind the desk without one. Okay, so no, I'm assuming are you allowed to circulate, Tim, is my question. I don't know if schools are still saying to their teachers that they can't circulate the room. I do wonder if that's still a thing. We, at first, when the pandemic was in its kind of heights, we were kind of instructed to not circulate at all. And now there's a bit of circulation. We've created bigger kind of walkways. So of course you're not going to be like standing over a child breathing into their ears, but you are allowed to circulate the room with the face covering on a bit more than you were before. So I wonder if you guys are still instructed to not circulate at all, or are you at a stage where you're allowed to wander as long as you've got the face covering on? Let me know. I do wonder. I wonder how other schools are managing it. And then fresh face mask every day, says Karen. Well done. Well done. Miss Kato Stem says that she likes the idea of the added level of protection a face mask gives. She said she'll be wearing one for the foreseeable. We've got Andrew Farmer, a new entrance in the chat. Welcome, Andrew. He said, I'm trying to... Oh, I see. You've changed your nickname now. So I think that you used to be PBG6E57E6C3PR. I preferred it. It was more catchy. Andrew said, I'm trying to change my nickname. My name's Andrew and I'm the teacher in Spain, originally from the UK. Welcome. Welcome, Andrew. I don't recognize your name. If it's your first show, first time listening to me, welcome. If it's not, then welcome back. And then, yeah, Tim says, putting one on to circulate. Excellent. Thank you very much for interacting. What we're going to do, I'm going to take a breath because I've been talking for a lot. We've had 10 minutes of that. And we're going to have 10 minutes talking about this 13.5 billion pounds catch-up fund. My question to you guys is, if you had the power, if you had the power to decide how this money gets spent on schools and education, how would you spend it? That is my question. If you had the power to choose where this 13.5 billion pounds catch-up fund was going to be spent, how it's going to be spent, how would you spend it? That is my question. On the other side of a bit of news, just to give me some time to breathe.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News with Sebastian Sagnier.
I am Sebastian Sagnier, and this is Teachers Talk Radio with the news. The First Lady Jill Biden will be welcoming students across America to the nation's capital in a virtual trip to Washington, D.C. It is the latest virtual trip produced by Discovery Education, a global edtech leader. The Shadows Child Poverty Minister, Wes Streeting, has warned that the government will face the impact of what he called recent grotesque school budget cuts. He also revealed he is undergoing treatment for kidney cancer. The popular Netflix show, Sex Education, is rumoured to be aired this June or July. This comes at a time of much discussion over the government's new RSE curriculum that is now compulsory for all schools. This is Teachers Talk Radio, and that was the news with me, Sebastian Sagnier.
Live from London, this is the Sunday Lunch with Khalil Rouse on Teachers Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome, welcome back. We're into the last kind of 8 minutes of the show. Thank you to everyone that has kind of passed through the live studio. The numbers that have been clocking up have been very impressive, if I do say so myself. So thank you very much. If you've just joined us at the beginning of the show, I was joined by Sasha White. We were talking about the trials and tribulations of being a parent and a teacher. So if you want to listen back to that part of the show, just head to ttradio.org/listen-back. And my show will kind of go up there after I come off the live in about 7 or so minutes. We also just were speaking about whether it's time for masks to come off in the classroom, because Boris is saying that it's time. And I get the impression from the chat room that some people will not be listening to his recommendations. We're just going to keep them on. And I think I'm leaning that way, just to keep, if there's something I can do to make sure I'm safeguarding myself and others, more about others, I guess, I will keep mine on as much as possible, unless I need to breathe. And the final part of this show, if you've just joined, we're now going to be talking about this 13.5 billion pound catch-up fund and how you would want to spend it if you had the power, if you had the power. That's my question to you. Just a bit of context. So the reason I'm saying this, there was a BBC article that I read, I think it just only got released 2 days ago. And I always wonder where they get these numbers from. I always wonder, where do you get 13.5 billion pounds from? Not in terms of where you're going to get the money from, but how do you calculate that that's how much money is needed? I always wondered. Anyone that's ever worked in government or whatever you want to call it, or planning, please let me know how they kind of calculate these astronomical figures, because I have no idea. But so I always had an issue with this kind of catch up and this lost learning and everything else. I always felt like it would send out the wrong message to kids and make them feel a bit disheartened about how far behind they are. So yeah, I had my own kind of qualms with the use of this catch up fund and everything else. But let me know, where would you put the money? Where are the areas that you think we should put funding into that can actually support kids who have missed being in the classroom for so many months? At the moment, as you've probably seen in the kind of local news, they're talking about longer school days. Longer school days seems to be the first way they're gonna put the money in. Let me know how you think about that. This article is saying that the impact of school closures meant that by autumn 2020, pupils had lost up to 2 months in reading overall and up to 3 months in maths in primary schools. Who calculates that? How do you know they've lost 2 months in reading specifically? Who knows? But anyways, we move on. So to make up for the loss of so much time in school, the report recommends a number of measures that should be part of the recovery plans the government is working on. These include longer school days so that children can take part in a range of education, sports, and social activities. I don't think I mind longer school days as long as it's not just trying to get them to stay in the classrooms for longer. That's not going to solve what they've missed out on, in my opinion. I think, especially when you're talking about year sevens, year eights, who haven't got the kind of looming national exams, there is no need, in my opinion, to keep them in the classroom for longer to make them, inverted commas, learn more. That's not going to solve it. That one extra lesson per day is not going to get them to fill the gap or the void that they've not allegedly missed, but they have missed. But I think if you're going to put money and time into allowing them to interact socially and have sports and social activities, everything else, then I'm all for it. Let me know what you think about longer school days. Are you a fan of longer school days for I don't know, teenagers that are going to GCSEs soon, year 10s? Do you agree with them having longer school days, more lessons, more geography, more maths, more English, because they've actually got exams coming up? Or should they also get longer school days so they can actually interact socially and have sports activities, social activities, enrichment possibilities, everything like that? Let me know what you think. Are longer school days a solution, or are they just a nice idea that makes it look like the government are doing something when really, in terms of the kind of tangible impact it could have, maybe it's minimal? Let me know what you think. A number of messages coming in response to that, which is nice. So we've got 5.74 saying children shouldn't be given the impression that they've done something wrong, they've done something wrong in falling behind. Money should be spent on adapting curriculum if necessary. Agreed. I agree with you. Telling kids that they're behind is not going to help. You're not going to get a kid if you tell them, oh, you're behind now, you've lost this amount of learning time. No, not many kids are going to then say, oh, rightio, I'm now going to go and knuckle down so I can catch up. No kid's going to do that, and they shouldn't have to do that. Us as schools and teachers need to adapt our curricula to make sure that we can now plug in the gaps. I remember when we missed, when we missed the end of the lessons that we missed in the first ever lockdown, we kind of adapted the curriculum to make sure that we covered those same topics in September when we returned. So that was our adaptation. So yes, they weren't in school because the whole country was locked down, et cetera, et cetera. But then when they rejoined in September, we went back over, not back over, we actually taught the stuff they missed. And now our year 8 and 9 schemes of work are different because we've put in the work that they missed in the very first lockdown. So yeah, agreed. Adaptation of curriculum is necessary. KGN has come back in and said, I spent this year doing remedial work, interventions and catch up for students who missed school due to COVID. My salary was paid through the £80 per student. This is ending this academic year, and so my students will no longer have the support from me. This is now causing panic and upset from students and their parents. Sorry to hear it. But it's interesting to know that money has been put in for people doing catch up for students, tailored, targeted catch up, and the salaries going to be paid through that kind of £80. So it is going on. I don't have experience of it myself. My school's not doing anything like that. We're quite a new and small school. It's interesting to hear what big and old schools, that's the opposite of new and small, big and full schools are doing at the moment. Albert's saying, I think the summer transition school is a good idea. Some schools do this yearly anyway, and a mix of academic and enrichment. Agreed, but I feel like it's only been targeted at year 6 to year 7. Those leaving primary school and starting in year 7, there's a lot of focus on their transition over summer. I think I get that. I think my school's doing that. A lot of schools are doing that. Just aid the transition, because if you have missed a lot of primary school and you think about the big bad secondary school that you're going to be going into in September, I think just having some extra time maybe with your prospective teachers to maybe get to know them, feel a bit more calm about starting your new chapter in your educational life will help the kids. A bit of enrichment, some activity, some fun things, not just sit down, here's 2 weeks of extra maths because you're behind. That's not going to help. But I think an extra week or two of interactions with new adults, their prospective teachers, to make their transition less daunting is a good idea. And if you can put the money towards that, then Albert's all for it. And I'm leaning in favor of the thing. I'm also all for it as well. Karen saying longer school days because he took a trip to Alton Towers for live learning for physics. Nice. So longer school days allow them to take a trip to Alton Towers so they could do some live learning. That's a nice way of enriching them. That they wouldn't be able, they missed out on school trips, didn't they? This whole time we had COVID and lockdown, we weren't allowed to go on school trips. They've missed out on a year of trips. So put money into trips. That's what I put money into. Let's fund some more trips when we can. When it's safe to do so, let's get some more trips because they've missed out on some really enriching learning experiences outside of the classroom. Albert's then said there needs to be increased mentoring support in schools. 100%. This helps both pastorally and academically. Agreed. You're taking the words out of my mouth. I'm conscious of time, but mental health is rife at the moment in my school and other schools, I can imagine. We need more funding. If you can put some of that $13.5 billion into getting schools with trained mental health practitioners that are enough trained mental health practitioners to counsel or coach staff or talk to kids and actually help them, because so many kids are struggling at the moment and they're in schools where staff do their best, but I'm not a trained mental health professional. So I can have conversations. I've done some kind of ad hoc training, everything else, but I'm not skilled. I don't have the kind of the knowledge and the know-how of how best to deal with more acute mental health needs. So if you can put more funding into that, that would massively support schools. Get some of the $13.5 billion into mental health funding. 100%, Albert, I agree with you. We need to wrap this up. There's so many comments I want to get through. Oh, my word. Karen saying overnight social trips for catch up with other key skills. Albert saying now should be the time to adapt our curriculum offer and what testing actually looks like. Agreed, because we've had years and years and years of thinking that testing looked like GCSEs and A-levels, and now we're realizing we can survive without them. So maybe it's time to rethink it. Maybe COVID silver linings, we rethink our testing. Sasha said that Lamhart Teas did some great work on the language you use with students surrounding this whole idea of recovery, in inverted commas. It's been really helpful to structure what we're doing as mastery rather than just catching up. Albert said he was in a webinar about how funding can be used and schools can use the funding however they wish. Doesn't need to be just the year 6-7 transition. Okay, interesting. I wish we'd get more into that. We may have to bring you back on the show, Albert. We may have to talk about that and get you back on the show. You're one of my first, if not my first guests. I can't remember now. Fire Salt saying schools are so much more than final grades. The students targeted will be those who have fallen behind academically. It's important to recognize this, but also to recognize what else schools do and catch up with that. Indeed, we're so much more than grades. Agreed. Karen saying mentoring, well-being, ambassador training, counselors. Agreed, 100%. And then Graham Collins coming right at the end saying, loved my show. Thank you very much, Mr. Colum. And it's great to hear me back on the air. I've loved being back. I did miss it. But I know I've run over by 3 minutes. I'm going to have Tom Rogers in my social media DMs telling me to get off. So I'm going to do that now. All I can say, wow, my throat has gone hoarse. All I can say is thank you very much, as always, for anyone that tuned in, whether it was live through the Podbean app, maybe it was via YouTube, maybe it was via Twitter, Facebook, who knows. If you commented, shared, liked it, whatever you did in the background, thank you very much. It's been a great show, as always. If you're new to listening, my name is Khalil Rouse, and I'm now on the Sunday Lunch Show every Sunday at 1 p.m. until 2:30, right after Graham Collum. Later on today, we've got the Sunday Late Show with Tony Breslin. That's at 8 p.m. So you've got a bit of a gap between then and between now and then. So go and get yourself sorted and make sure you tune into Teachers Talk Radio at 8 p.m. today. I'll be signing out. Thank you very much. It's been a great show. Cheers, guys.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.
Woo, what a show. Loved it. Hear my baby in the background.